Welcome to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, brought to you by Exodus Trail Cameras, the number one podcast for bow hunting product information and hunting stories from across the nation. And now, here's your nine-fingered host, Dan Johnson.
Mondays suck, but hopefully I can be responsible for making your Mondays suck just a little bit less. Hopefully you guys had a great Easter weekend, got to eat some good food, hang with family and friends, and just enjoy the weekend. I know my daughter had an absolute blast. She gets spoiled, and she knows it. She had like three or four different Easter egg hunts, and I think she's still on her sugar high. So that's going to be fun putting to bed tonight. Anyway, here's the deal. Tonight, or today, or whatever time it is that you're listening to this podcast, we are going to be talking with Jay Robert from Tenzing. Now, I've talked to a lot of people over my quote-unquote span in the industry. It sounds dumber every time I say it, but this guy is very intelligent. He knows a lot about packs, and he's one of those rare people who just can blow you away with knowledge of a product. And that's what Jay's going to do today. He's going to talk about Tenzing packs, the company history, the product lineup, the bits and pieces that make up the pack. And then we're going to get into some scenarios of what pack might fit what kind of hunter, how to properly wear the packs, and just so much more. So hopefully, like I said, I can help make your Monday suck just a little bit less, and enjoy. On the phone with me now is Jay Robert from Tenzing. How's it going today, Jay?
Excellent, Dan. Thanks for calling.
So the most important question I am going to ask you today is, how did your 2015 hunting season go?
Mine was good. Yeah, I mean, I didn't get an elk, which I usually do every year, and I put in for a special draw tag, and then when I got there, I wasn't happy with it at all, so I didn't go back. So just a bit of learning curve there. But living in Idaho, you know, the hunting goes year-round, so it's, you know, if we're not hunting, we're fishing. It's just ongoing. So it's, yeah, excellent last year.
So is that where you live in Idaho then?
I do, yeah. You know, Plano is the Plano Synergy is over the Tenzing brand, and they're outside of Plano, Illinois. And that's where the distribution center is for part of our brands. And then the office that hired me was also in Plano. So in the beginning, I just commuted back and forth probably 6-8 times a year. And now I don't have to go that much. So it's just awesome.
Good. So I want to go back to this elk hunt. You said you had you did your limited draw tag. Was that in Idaho as well?
Yeah, in Idaho, you know, you can just buy a tag over the counter. So Even a non-resident, you can just buy a tag if you know where to go. And since I've lived here my entire life, I'm 51 now, I really know where to go. And I've been quite successful for either archery or rifle, and I love both. So I just thought I'd put it for this special unit that is got some really big bulls in there. You really should shoot like a, you know, a 350-plus bull in there. And I didn't have time during the summer to do my homework. And so when I got ready to go, my son had the tag as well. We got up there and realized that 90% of this unit is private property. And so 10% of the unit is okay. You can hunt it. But on that 10% of that land, there was 26 tags and 24 people hunting it. So that's not for me.
Overwhelmed with people then?
Yeah, just too many people for the amount of property to hunt, you know, because Idaho's BLM or Forest Service lands are open for us. And, you know, I have six horses and tons of gear, and we go back over the top of the mountains where people don't go, and we don't have to deal with people. So going to where I had to deal with people just didn't fit me, so I didn't go back, which is okay.
I tell you, I had a pretty unpleasant I won't say unpleasant, because anytime you're in the mountains, it's awesome. But this 2015 in September, I went out for an elk hunt in Idaho on the east side of the state, and it rained and rained and rained. And so I was in my tent almost more than I was hunting.
That's not very fun.
No, not at all. So, Tenzing now, what is your, how long have you been working for Tenzing? Tell us a little bit about, I know you've been there since day one. So tell us, give us a little introduction to yourself and Tenzing.
Okay. So, and like in 1991, I started a store here in the Boise Valley. It was called, in the beginning, it was like a surplus store, but I took it up to 13,000 square foot Idaho Outdoor Outfitters is what I called it. And I opened a second one, and then I opened an additional backpack company that did manufacturing of products. And then we sold it to my store as well as dealers. And that's how I got into business. And so I did this other backpack company for 15 years. And it ended up that, you know, I had a partner, and there's a lot of circumstances always that cause, you know, things to happen. And I don't want to get into any of that because it doesn't matter. Anyway, I ended up selling that business to my partner, and Tom Hurt from Plano, the CEO, we'd been working together for a couple of years, and I was doing some side projects even on Plano tackle bags for them in my wholesale manufacturing portion of my life. And he said, I want to hire you. And, you know, I said, no. I mean, it didn't make any sense. I owned, you know, half this backpack company, and as time went along for a couple of years, the stores I shut down, and then I just had the backpack company, and I realized that something had to change. I needed to buy my partner out or leave. And so Tom Hurt was persistent enough to hire me to get me to start Tenzing. And at the time, there was no Tenzing. It was just, he said, I want to build the very best backpacks anybody's ever seen. I want you to compete against your current, you know, company, which is going to be a little bit of a problem. But I also want you to compete against Badlands and Everly Stock and all the other good packs out there, because there's a lot of really good packs, you know. And I don't ever talk bad about anybody's products, because they're an inspiration, and they're a real driver to help you be better at what you do. And so competition is good. And, you know, that. So anyway, that's what happened was Tom Hurt hired me to start this brand, and there was no brand. And so I left by the company, and 5 years ago, almost to the date, March 1st, 5 years ago, I went to work with this no idea what the brand was going to be, but we were going to build a backpack like no one had ever seen before. So that's where it started.
So that was about 5 years ago, you said?
Yeah, 5 years ago, March 1st. So it's just 5 years and a couple weeks.
So what was your first, like, I guess when you go in to design a pack and, you know, the owner of Plano says, all right, Jay, make me the baddest ass pack that you could possibly make and make me enough SKUs to cover everybody. What's going through your head at that time?
You know, I think it's pretty exciting, because as bad as this may sound, I got to start over with an open budget, I mean, unlimited budget, really, to build anything I wanted with these other folks' money. And so basically the 15 years that I struggled to get to where I was at, and the other company was doing well, they were successful, I got to start over. It was like a do-over, you know. I was like, okay, here today, start over. And so they sent me a whole bunch of packs from their part of the world, you know, because the packs in Idaho and the 13 Western states are typically a little different than you're going to find, you know, anywhere in the East. And I understood that, but they sent me all kinds of packs, and they said, these are just simply for ideas and, you know, thoughts and things you can do and things you don't want to copy. And so I had this massive pile of packs, and I sit there. I remember, you know, just sitting there looking at all this stuff going, man, what have I got myself into? Because, you know, there's so many packs and so many people do a good job. Even, you know, even Cabela's with their own brand and Redhead with their own brand, or, you know, Bass Pro with Redhead, they do a good job. So how do you build something that's superior? You know, and so that was the goal, was to do that. And that's ultimately what we did. And I did that in the next 6 months. He asked me to start with 12 packs, and, I did 10, and I had two I just wasn't happy with. And so when we launched, I launched with 10 packs, and I threw two in the garbage. So that was what we launched with, was 10 different packs.
Okay. So when you're sitting there and you're designing a pack, how do you differentiate between what someone needs and what someone wants?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So one of the things as a designer of outdoor products that anybody, including myself, has to understand is you are the man or the woman that has to take everybody's input and throw them all in this bucket. And then when you're done, you really need to come out of that bucket with something that, you know, let's say 60% or 70% of the consumer is going to like and want, because you're never going to get 100%, especially with a pack, because, you know, John wants to carry his rangefinder on his right hip and Luke wants to carry his on his left shoulder strap. And so everybody, especially with packs, because everybody has these ideas, man, if I just did a pack like this. So ultimately the goal, and my goal was to look at the mass majority, you know, whether it's tree stand hunting, spot and stock hunting, backcountry overnight, bike out hunting, what can I build that's going to fit the mass majority, that's going to be something that is easy for the dealer to sell and the consumer to understand, as well as the dealer to understand. And so all those elements come into play when you're designing the product. You have to figure out, you know, how am I going to, as a designer, how am I going to sell this to the dealer so that they can put it in front of the consumer? Because if I can't do that, then nothing's ever going to work. So since I had the retail stores at the end, I learned a lot. You know, I didn't learn, I'm just a bonehead out of high school. I didn't go to college. But I learned how to buy, I learned how to sell, I learned how to, you know, provide goods to consumers, as a dealer. So I had this 20-year education on all the things that matter when you manufacture a product. Make sense?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
So when, you know, you're taking all this advice from the end user, the consumer, how much of that is really that you actually absorb? Because you're the expert. You know, kind of in a way, what people want, and some of that stuff is probably like you said, one guy prefers it on the right, one guy prefers it on the left. Do you kind of go for a majority to make the most people happy, or is it, hey, if I educate them on how to use it properly, they're going to love it?
I think you do need to educate them. So that was part of what we did as we launched. When we launched, we spent 9 months from the day they hired me till we launched at ATA, really building a really rock solid concrete foundation to build the brand on top of. And that's why when we launched, everybody, you know, the first year was like, how the heck did you guys do this? I mean, it looks like a 5 or 10 year old brand. Well, it's because of the way we did it. We did what you're talking about. We needed to make sure we educated everybody in the process. So from the time we finally had a name and we started building this foundation, we also made sure that everything we did was consistent. So when you see when you talk about the materials in a minute, but when you see a Tenzing backpack, you see the yellow daisy chain, right, on the back of it. That yellow daisy chain, we actually got the trademark for that. And there were other people that had used it in the past, you know, maybe not exactly like ours, but the color and the way that I did that screams Tenzing. And it doesn't matter if it's in an airport or if it's on the mountain or where it's at. When you see that, the first thing you think of is Tenzing. And so you don't have to know my name. And so as we launched, we started doing things that would drive the consumers to the website. And the website had videos for every single product. To answer your question, we tried to educate not only the dealers, but the consumers, but everything had to be exactly consistent. If you looked at our brochure and, you know, the pack on there, all the specs, how many pockets, how many compartments, you know, blah, 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 blah. It's all in the brochure. It's all on the website. It's all anything that we did in social media. It's all exactly the same. And it has the answer to all the questions that a consumer has. How much does the pack weigh? How much will it carry? You know, all those questions, they're all there for every pack we did. And so you do educate the consumers and the dealers as you build a strong foundation in the beginning.
So going back a little bit to design and how hard is it with so many different sizes and shapes of people to create a pack that may be a necessity for somebody, but still fit their body type?
It's a challenge. And because, you know, I'm 5'9", 180 pounds. And so I'm like probably on the smaller size. I would say average man's probably closer to the, you know, 5'11", 6 foot, somewhere in there, a little taller, longer torso. Now, with a lightweight backpack that you're going to be using for going back and forth to a tree stand, those specs for that person aren't as big a deal because you're not carrying a lot of weight. But when you get into someone, you know, going up the mountain with one of our TZ5000s or TZ6000, and they go up the mountain with this pack, that torso adjustment absolutely has to be built into the pack so they can adjust it to fit the length of their torso so that that waist belt's sitting exactly where it belongs in the hips so that you can transfer that load and it's not all on just the shoulder, it's not all just on the waist. So that's the hardest part, is in a bigger pack that's going to carry more weight, because with our packs, you know, they're not... That's the other thing about a hunting pack, is a mountaineering pack. People will say, you know, I don't know why your packs are $400. I can buy the nicest Osprey in the world for $200, you know. Okay, here's the thing. An Osprey pack or a North Face pack, they're beautiful packs. They do a fantastic job. That pack is designed to go up the mountain, whatever mountain that you want to climb, with a load, 50 or 60 pounds, and then you're going to come down the mountain with less, because that's what you're doing. You're eating yourself, eating your food, eating your stuff out of your pack, and it gets lighter. A backpack for hunting, at least ours, are designed on our high-end series. They're designed to go up with 60 or 70 and come back down with as much as that man or woman can carry. So if it's 160 pounds, it can be done.
So, and that kind of transitions us into a little bit about some of the material that you guys use. And I know one thing that has always stuck with me when I talked to you guys at the very first ATA show, you said, you know, our packs may not be the lightest, but do you really want the lightest possible pack when you're trying to carry out an elk quarter and extra weight like that, you know, real heavy weight? So explain to us a little bit about some of the material that goes into these packs.
Okay. So again, when we decided to do this, and I sit here with all those packs looking at me in the face, and I really went back and said, what were the things that I liked the least about the packs that I did before and the competition? What does, you know, some of these other people are going to be competing against, what are they doing that's frustrating to me that I need to be better at? And the materials was the biggest thing, because as packs get cold, they get stiff. And some of the materials that were, as they designed materials, it was interesting to me, because you take a treacle material, which gives you a soft finish, because that's what they call the treacle. And then they put a waterproof backing on that treacle, and it's put right onto it. And then they take a jersey cotton, and they bond all three of those layers together. And that gives you, you know, in the hunter's mind 15, 20 years ago, that was a pack weight material. So you had strength, and you had all the stuff you needed to make this work. Well, the problem with that was, as it got cold, it got stiff. And so what I did was I said, let's go back to the drawing board here and figure out how to get around this. And, you know, polar fleece, all these other fabrics, none of them, the polyesters, none of them worked correct for what we were trying to do. So I ended up back at Treco, and I was using, like, there's different weights of Treco. I was using a 240, and I wasn't really happy with that, which is just the weight of Treco. So I actually went clear up to a 380 Treco, and then I started messing with waterproofing. And so I picked five of the very best waterproofing that I could find that were, had, you know, good information behind them. And I sent those to independent laboratories and had independent laboratory testing done on those on the Treco. And then I also had them sent to me, and I sit around here and froze them in the freezer and did everything I could. And then I test them, and I came up with what I thought was the very best one of the bunch. And then sure enough, which was awesome, was the independent laboratory testing came back, and the one I had chose was the one that they said was the strongest and also the most pliable as well. So that was really cool. Now, rather than do the third layer, which is a jersey that you bond together, I didn't want to do that because that's what makes it stiff. And so I told the factory they have to cut every single lining for the treacle separate, and it's a 210 lining, which is nylon, and 210 nylon lining is not only lighter, but it's also stronger than a jersey cotton that was bonded. So that's why our packs don't get stiff when they're cold. They're separate layers. They move independently. And, you know, there's always going to be some kind of noise and stuff just because that's the way it works. But that stiff noise is gone. Anything doesn't have stiff, noisy packs. So the other thing I wanted to do was figure out how to make all the high-stress areas stronger. And I had been using some Dyneema in the past for several things. And Dyneema is a material, and it's woven into a denier. And so I had played with this and started messing around with it some more to the point where I liked it. The problem was it's very expensive. It's about $12 a yard, and you can't just buy it. You have to have it made. So I kept messing with this and kept messing with this, and I decided, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put the Dyneema in all the high-stress areas. And so you take a 500 denier nylon, which would be like a military-grade backpack with a 500G Cordura, and then when you have it made, you weave this Dyneema into that. And Dyneema is 15 times as strong as a steel cable, and it floats on water. And you can look that up online. It's D-Y-N-E-E-M-A. And if you just go on and do Dyneema and do Dyneema tests and stuff like that, you can see the white fiber I'm talking about. So if you take a quarter inch braided steel cable and a quarter inch of Dyneema, and you do a pull test with it, the Dyneema is 15 times as strong as a steel cable, and it floats on water. So as we use that in all our high stress areas, there was a real feeling of relief on knowing, you know, how strong the packs would be and that they could carry that huge weight back off the hill without having issues. So that was the main things I did for the two materials. And then, you know, the zippers, I said, I want to use YKK. And my company drilled and they said, why? And I said, because they're the best. And they said, who said that? I said, I don't know. I mean, who are these people we always talk about? They said, right? You know, yeah, we all do that.
Yeah.
They said, yeah. And so one of the guys said, let's just pick the five best. Let's pick the five best zippers, YKK, SKB, and let's have independent laboratory testing done. Let's choose the best zipper that way. And I said, hey, I like that. So that's what we did. And I don't tell people which zipper I chose, but the one I chose is not what I thought it was going to be. The zipper strength all the way across, because you have to do a lot of different things. You have to test the slide, which is the pull that goes on the teeth, and you have to test the teeth, and then you have to test it, you know, vertically, horizontally, crossways. You have to do all these tests, and then you take the best from all those tests and come up with a zipper that worked best for your product. The first year, I had a big screw up. I used a bunch of five zippers in some of my packs and some of my bow cases. And to this day, I'm still seeing brand new packs for that screw up because number five is too small on any backpack on the outside of any pocket. And I only used it in a couple places, like on my hip pockets and a few areas that had small pockets. It was a giant mistake on my part. I learned a big lesson there because as that little zipper gets dirt and stuff in it, it's too small and it fails. The zipper doesn't fail. The slide fails. So just so the listeners know, you can actually take not only my zipper, but anybody's zipper that has the slide coming off the teeth and it's moving and it's not zipping, and you push that clear back to where it starts at, and then you take a pair of pliers and you squeeze that slide back together, and that zipper will work again. That's just a really easy fix, especially if you're in the field and have a Leatherman or something. Eventually, it's going to fail again, but it's going to get by for quite a time after that. So a little extra curl in there.
So with these packs, you know, now you guys have a whole bunch of different varieties. But what were you thinking about as far as the original, you said 10 packs? What was the goal to accomplish with those original 10 packs?
Yeah, the original 10, I felt like we really needed to have five or six that would go 13 Western states, Alaska, you know, Canada, and be able to go anywhere in the world on a big game hunt outside of a tree stand or, a spot and stock situation to a blind or anything like that that's going to be an easy walk from the house or an easy walk from the pickup. So I felt like we really needed to have that because people from all over the United States and all over the world, they like to go on these, you know, backcountry hunts, whether no matter where it's at. It could be in Quebec, or it could be in Australia, and you need a bigger pack for bigger stuff like that. So I wanted to have five or six of those, and then I wanted to have another four or five that would be good for tree stand type use. You know, a single sling that would help you carry your bow at a place for the rangefinder, and I wanted to have lightweight, just an ultra lightweight backpack that people could just throw their gear in. And we really tried to focus on telling people, you know, if you just get a pack, when you get ready to go to your tree stand, even if you don't need a pack, you'll always have your gear. You'll have your flashlight, your pocket knife, all the stuff that always goes back and forth with you can be kept in this pack. And so like our 1200, it weighs 2 pounds. It weighs less than the coat you're wearing, and yet it'll always carry your gear back and forth for you. So, and that being said, we launched as a hero-based brand. We wanted to help the hunter go further and stay longer. And so everything we did was talked about as we went forward.
So when somebody is going to start shopping for a pack, and I know there's so many different ways you could take this, but we could start with maybe out west. What are some common mistakes people make when they purchase a pack?
I think probably one of the most common mistakes that would happen with the pack is they want to match their gear. So they love Realtree Extra, and so they're looking for a Realtree Extra pack. And not to say that there's not good Realtree Extra packs, but I think people get caught up in the look of the pack more than the function and the fit. And obviously the fit is the very most important, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But if it fits well, but the function's lousy, that's not good either. So you really need to think about, if I was going to go buy a pack today, the first things I would do is think about what am I using it for? And because ultimately most everybody ends up in my world, we probably have, most people have 3 or 4 or 5 packs. So you get the pack out that you're going to use for that day. So if I'm going to do a tree stand hunt, it's not going to be the same pack as what I'm going to do, you know, a spike up on top of the hill. It's just, they're different packs. So if I'm going to go buy a pack, I'm going to take my stuff and I'm going to lay it out, and then I'm going to go to the store and I'm going to shop for what fits me the best, and hopefully, you know, look at the quality, look at the warranty. Everybody always cares about warranty. Lifetime warranty is pretty common on packs, but, you know, that's always thrown in there that it's up to us. And, you know, if you tear it, or we'll repair it before we replace it if possible. So that's kind of consistent with everybody. But it's really important to understand that if you go buy a pack that costs $49, the materials are completely different. They don't have the same materials that our packs have. They don't have the same buckles. They don't have the same zippers. And so you can buy one of those every year for $50 a year, or you can buy one Tenzing, which our number one selling pack is the 2220 at $200, and that pack's going to last you 10 years. My opinion on a way a pack should last is easily answered by saying I feel it should be the same as a pair of boots. If you wear those boots from the day you get them and the way they fit and you love them until they're worn out, you don't take them back and throw them on the counter and say, these boots sucked, I only wore them 8 years, I want another pair. You go in and say, I love those boots, I wonder if they still have them. And so a backpack is the same as a pair of shoes or a pair of boots. If you get that many years out of it and you love it that much, you're going to stick with that brand.
Right.
I thought maybe I answered, I'm not sure on that one.
Well, we'll have to go back and listen, but I think you did.
Okay.
What about as far as body parts are concerned and how to properly wear a pack? What's a maybe a misconception or an error that people make?
But some of the most common ones that I see is they'll buy a pack and they'll say, what's the waist? Let's say it's, you know, my waist will fit you from 32 to 42. That's what my adjustment in my waist belt is. With pack, that's difficult, because here's what I'm saying is my pack is going to fit this guy that wears a 32 waist, and it's going to be small. And so it won't go any smaller than that. If he's got a 30-inch waist, maybe the pack's not going to get tight enough on his waist. Bodies are really hard because every one of us are built a little different. Some of us, you know, are fit and we work out. We have, you know, we're ripped. And we got a six pack and we don't have, you know, any love handles and the packed waist belts are fitting good on our hips. And then that, you know, your best friend's twice your size and he's got some big old love handles and the pack doesn't fit the same. But what I started to get at is if the waist belt's a 32-inch waist belt and you're a 32, that's what that means. But you can't go home and put on coveralls, you know, extra long coat and all that stuff and put that pack on and still expect it to fit like a 32. So that's always been a problem with backpacks is you're wearing them over the top of everything else you've already stacked on top of you. And so some of the guys that say, man, I am a 38 waist and this pack doesn't fit me. Well, take all your clothes off and see if it'll fit because it will. But there's so that's a little bit of a frustrating part. The goal is really to help people understand to keep this, especially with the bigger packs, keep the shoulder straps flat on the back where they're just going over the shoulder straps nice and clean, not a bunch of holes. You know, if you can put your hand behind the shoulder strap where the pack isn't on your body right. That shoulder strap needs to come all the way over, and then the load lifter needs to hook right into. We use aluminum stays in our big packs, and the load lift needs to hook into that and pull that pack in tight against your back. Otherwise, it just isn't going to be able to carry a big load. So no perfect answer on that. Hopefully, you know, we'll make enough adjustments that we can move these packs around and fit most of the people that are carrying the big loads. It's a tough one.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, like I think you nailed it earlier when you said there's so many different, you got to make a product that's going to hit as many people as possible. Now, let's talk about scenarios as far as hunting is concerned, and we'll just kind of go from the tree stand hunter to out west. But let's say for a guy or a gal who maybe hunts some public land where in whitetail country on the East Coast where they have to take their tree stand in with them every time, so it's on their back or, you know, they're holding it or something like that. And they have to carry all their gear in at one time, and then they carry it all back out with them, and they're sitting in a tree stand for however many hours. What pack might fit that scenario the best?
I think that person, you know, typically is going to be able to take one of the smaller packs, and actually, if they're using a tree stand that has the straps and everything on it, so the tree stand is to their back tightest, then hook the pack on the tree stand. And then if they, you know, go to their stand and they climb up it and whatever, and then they climb back out and they have to go look for the animal, and it's whatever, half an hour or an hour, they can still take their pack and put it in their body, you know. So any of the lightweight packs are going to be able to hook over the top of the tree stand somehow so that you can carry all your goods with you. I have a really awesome carbon fiber platform that's designed to carry tree stands. So you could, it's not specifically for tree stands, but you could carry this carbon fiber frame. And if you were, you know, carrying three tree stands, you can stack them all on there and it fits you comfortably. But that scenario isn't really that common. Most of the people, like you just mentioned, if they're going to go in, they're carrying everything, they're just going to take a small pack in that situation. If they're setting up tree stands and they're carrying a bunch and setting them up as they go through their property and setting three or four, this other unit would work. But I think the small packs, anybody's small pack is going to work best on the outside of a tree stand being carried on the back.
So we're talking like the TZ 2200 that you mentioned earlier, the 1250 and the 1500, somewhere around there.
Yeah. And the 1250 is our big lumbar style pack. And that really is more of a guide style pack, pretty heavy duty and made to carry a lot of weight, even though it looks like a, you know, like a fanny pack, which is just in terminology of what a, you know, a half of a pack that fits on your waist is. But it's actually, it's a heavy duty lumbar pack that's made to carry a lot of weight. And it has the same waist belt and suspension as our 5,000 and 6,000 backpack.
Okay. All right. So the next scenario then is, let's say South Dakota, or you may not be packing in to camp all the way in, but you're definitely spotting and stalking, and you're bringing You know, maybe you're bringing some water in with you. You're bringing all your cleaning gear, your meat bags, and everything you're going to need to go in, spot and stalk, and potentially haul, you know, quarters of an animal out back to your truck.
Okay. So I just released a brand new pack this year. We had a gap from the 2220 to the 4000. For 3 years now, I've had the 4000, which is a perfect solution to the scenario you just laid on the table there. And now this year I have the 3000, and it's not going to do quite as much as the 4000, but it's about $80-$90 less than the 4000. The 4000 is designed to expand with the amount of gear you're carrying. So you can start out with a pack that's relatively flat against your back, and it's got pockets for all the miscellaneous. That's one thing with Kensing you're going to find is we do a lot of organizational pockets, and there's lots of places for all your stuff. Well, we have that in the center of the 4000, and then it has two up and down vertical pockets, just like a lot of packs do. But what those vertical pockets do on the outside of this pack is you can lay the whole pack into itself, and those pockets will zip to each other, and all the pack is behind those. And so the pack is only about 4 inches thick. And then if you decide you take a coat off, you need some more room, when you unzip that, there's a zipper on the main bag that you would zip it to, and now the pack is 30% bigger than it was. And then if you take some more clothes off, or you find something that you want to carry back or whatever, or your buddy getting tired and you put more stuff in your pack, you can expand it again. And now those side pack pockets are truly on the side of each side of the pack, and the pack's completely full in the middle. And then all of a sudden, you know, you get lucky and you whack an antelope or you pop whitetail or whatever. And so you can then take it and then zip it all the way around next to the frame. And the whole backpack is going to move away from the frame about 4.5 inches. I didn't make that big enough to carry an entire elk quarter on purpose, but it'll carry a boned out quarter easily, or a front shoulder easily, or, you know, a deer quarter, or two front shoulders. And it's a vented with mesh, and it allows you to carry the weight heavy up against your back, and then your backpack that's already full is on the outside of that, and it includes an extra set of three compression straps. And so now you go from your standard compression straps to there's actually like 10 on this one, two on top, two on bottom, two on each side. And then when you open that meat compartment, there's three more. So there's compression straps, because you have to pull it back in tight to the frame, otherwise you can't carry it correctly. So our 4000 is a huge, excellent pack, huge seller. It's not huge, it's just the right size for the kind of hunt you just threw out there.
Yeah, I can actually say that I have the TZ4000 and I've used it for several years. I actually used it for one of the next scenarios that we're going to talk about, and that's out west. You know, you start getting into your elk country, high country mule deer, and like Idaho where you live. Maybe an overnight, someone who is going to go, you know, they got a weekend off. They're going to go Saturday night. They're going to camp out. They're going to have their tent in their pack. What pack might work best in that scenario?
Okay, so the 4000 I just spoke of, that would work for that. If it's early bow season and you're not carrying a heavy sleeping bag, that pack would work for that, and you'd still be able to carry meat off. I did, however, build the first year, I built a TZ5000 and a TZ6000. We said, okay, let's build both of them. And one of them is going to be on a 24-inch platform, and the other is going to be on a 27-inch platform, so that I can fit a longer torso. So that guy that's 6'2" or 6'4", I have a pack that'll fit him. So I did the 5000 and the 6000, and they do basically the same thing that any type of mountaineering backpack would have: a sleeping bag compartment on the bottom, you know, a main compartment through the center. They have a place for the spotting scope on each side. They have a removable lid on the top that also expands up, you know, vertically if you need some extra room for gear. But it still has that meat compartment like the 4000. So the only difference in the 5 and the 6, just make sure you understand that, is the cubic inches, which is 1,000 cubic inches. But the 5000 is a shorter platform, so it's going to fit my size guy better, and the 6000 is going to fit the taller guy better. Now, that being said, because we have an adjustable torso and shoulder straps in this 5000 and 6000, Cam Haynes is like 5'8". and he uses the 6000 all the time. He'd love the 6000 because he can make it short enough that it fits him just fine. But you can't do that reverse with a 5000 for a tall guy.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah. And just so everybody knows, when they go, let's say after this podcast, you go visit the Tenzing website, the number represents the cubic inches, correct?
That is correct. And I did that, one, because that's a really easy way to kind of identify how many cubic inches the backpack is going to be. But two, the thing I learned in my first 15 years was that when you name a pack something, more than likely you're going to offend somebody in some way, or you're going to do something. We did a pack called a whitetail, right? And so I would have people call and they would say, "Man, I love that whitetail pack, but I pretty much hunt mule deer. Do you have a mule deer version?" And you're just scratching your head saying, "It'll work fine for mule deer," but so that was something I learned. I never even thought about that happening. And the other thing that I learned that I thought was really unique was, I did some packs early on for Jim Horn. He was the first guy I worked with. And so I did a Jim Horn signature series. And then I did a pack with Jim Shockey. And I did some packs with Matthews. And so another thing I learned was, as you license packs with people, you're also just cutting other people out. So, for a fact, Jim Shockey's not going to wear Jim Horn's pack. And, Ted Nugent's not going to buy Jim Shockey's pack. And so, okay, let's just eliminate all that and let's just go straight with numbers. TZ, which is pretending, and 6,000, 5,000, 4,000 cubic inches, and it just makes sense. So it's worked well.
All right. So the last scenario is multiple day hunt. We're talking 5+ days, maybe. You're carrying in a lot of gear. You're carrying in your, all your food, your backpack, your everything you need for a multiple day hunt. What product are we talking about then?
It's again the 5,000, the 6,000. So you're going to go for extended days like that. You're going to be carrying most of the same gear that you'd do an overnight spike out in. However, you're going to be carrying more food, but because you're going to be staying out there lighter, you're going to be, you're going to be buying more dehydrated food. You're not going to be taking, as heavy a food, because we all say, I can pretty much carry 60 pounds all day long, or, I can carry 40 pounds, or you kind of have some kind of idea where you want to be. And so if you're just going up for one night, you may go up there and carry 3 soda pops or beer or whatever with you, where if you're doing a 5-day hunt, you don't. So the 5,000 and 6,000 are still going to be probably the best choices for that extended period of hunt like that, but you're going to pack your pack differently.
Okay. Now talk to us a little bit about what you have. Two packs that are carbon fiber, right?
I do, yep.
The TZ-CF-13. What would be a scenario where you would use that pack?
You could use that for the same thing we were just talking about. It works good for the overnight bike out. It'll carry any kind of load you can imagine. That carbon fiber frame is built here in the United States. I got a patent on the design of it. You can lay 500 pounds of weight on top of that on concrete floor, and it won't go flat. And you can take them off a month later, and it goes exactly back to where it came from as far as the curvature of every piece. The goal with that one was really to build a platform to carry really any kind of load. If you wanted to use that beaver tail on the bottom of it, and in a military application, they wanted to carry 7.62 or 50 cal ammo cans, they're going to sit in there, and that the wing is going to wrap around it, and you're going to be able to carry it. So as far as like how much room and how much capacity, that's a hard question, because you could strap a massive load on this thing and it's going to flex and fit with your body and move with your body so that it can actually carry the load. So most people say that they found that it, 60 to 80 pounds doesn't seem to make much difference. But if you bring 120 or 150, and some guys tell me they carry 180 and these enormous loads, I don't know, but that pack makes it feel lighter because of the way it's so tight against the back and because of the way it's cut and molded. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that's built into that carbon fiber frame. So as you're walking, if you step forward with your right foot, your hip is moving forward and your left shoulder is going the opposite direction. So that pack flexes right behind that lumbar pad and moves with your body, but it won't allow the weight to go reverse from your body. Does that make sense? It's built right into the way I designed that. So carrying big loads, long distances, even for like a caribou hunt or something like that, there's an inner bag in that pack it comes with. You put all your clothes and all that kind of stuff in it. You wrap the wings and everything all around it. You go in, you pull your gear out, you set your tent and all that stuff up. You pull that inside bag out, you throw that inside your tent. Your clothes are in that bag, and then you have this basically flat pack that'll carry anything you can imagine, anything you strap on there, huge loads. So it's really excellent. And the CF-13 is the same way. But we had that was the 13 I was talking about. Sorry, the CF Legend. We had a certain group of people that were asking for really an elite pack that would come apart, and when they got to wherever they were going, they could zip the outer pack off and use it like a lightweight day pack, and then the frame and the beaver table in underneath, which is, you know, where the pack is hooked to, can carry giant loads. So with it, you can, let's say you go up the mountain and you have your son or your daughter with you, and you're carrying all your gear and everything, and you shoot an elk, you can take your pack completely apart, and you can take the outer pack off and put the clothes and the lighter stuff in it for your son or daughter, and then you can put as much weight as you can possibly carry on the beaver tail, what's left of the pack, and carry an entire load off back to the truck or whatever, and then you can leave the small pack in the truck, and you can go back up with just this lightweight pack because it weighs 3.5 pounds, and continue to carry the loads off the hill. Or if you're by yourself, you can do the same thing. The pack will hook to the outside of that big load. So there's straps that allow you to hook your pack back to the outside of whatever you're carrying on the frame.
Okay. And are those machined parts or are they molded?
So the carbon fiber is the highest quality carbon fiber made. It comes in a pre-impregnated state in a cold form, and it's layered and laid out onto a mold. And then when it's put onto the mold, we put it into a press, and basically we press it till it's completely flat, exactly like we want it, and we put it into a curing oven. And then we take it out of the curing oven and we put it onto a mold that is on a CNC machine, and we cut all of our cuts and grooves exactly where we want them with the CNC machine. And then we get rid of all the rough edges and, you know, hook it to the suspension. So it's quite a process.
Yeah. So my next question is, are tinting packs made in the U.S. or is it a combination of overseas and U.S.?
On the ones that have the carbon fiber is made here. Originally, our packs were coming out of a factory that we went and set up in China, because Plano had 30 factories in China. So it was really amazing that we could go over and we had this factory, just that's all they did was tins and packs. And we set them up exactly like we wanted them. And it was good. The quality was good. It was everything that I needed it to be. The problem with China is these folks go to their Chinese New Year and they don't come back, and you get new employees, and the new employees aren't as good as the ones that knew what they were doing. And so anyway, 98%, I would say 90% of the highest quality packs in the world are all made in Vietnam. And so now all tinting packs are made in Vietnam. And the reason why is because the quality is just absolutely astonishing. It is so good because they're so good at what they do. Now, I have a whole giant stack of 100% American-made packs right here in front of me. I'm looking at when you asked me that question. I've been working with the U.S. military. I've probably done 10 or 12 different 100% dairy compliant, 100% made in the USA packs. Some have carbon fiber frames, some don't. They're all made out of 500 denier Cordura, dairy compliant buckles, dairy compliant materials, and they're awesome. They're more expensive, you know, and so tinting packs, because of all the stuff they have on them and what they do already, are pretty expensive. And so if we tried to build a made in America backpack on the hunting side, I'm not sure that we could do it and make it work. I just don't know how that could be done.
Just from a price point standpoint, right?
Yeah, just from a price point standpoint. I mean, I've got some ideas on some things I'd like to try in the future. I don't want to talk about right now, but which would be 100% American made, because I'd love to do that. And we definitely have the designs now on the stuff I've done on the military side. But, you know, I love supporting America just like everybody else does. But if I could sell you a pack that's made wherever it's made, and I give you a lifetime warranty, and to this day, I've replaced every pack anybody sent me. Every pack that has any kind of issue doesn't go back to the distribution center. It comes to J. Robert in Star, Idaho, and I have a pile of packs here because if I don't know what's breaking, I can't fix it. So I evaluate every single pack that's returned, and I send a note back to customer care, please send him a new pack. Now, in the future, that'll be just like everybody else. We're going to start, you know, saying, okay, these little repairs, we're going to do some small repairs here and there. It's not going to affect anything, but to this day, I've replaced every pack that's had any kind of problem, including multiple packs where they've been pulled off the four-wheeler and caught in the sprocket, and they tore the whole entire side of it out. I just replaced one last week that was burned up in a fire. Now, when I replace that type of pack, just because I'm just going to tell the truth right now, I don't send you a brand new one because it wasn't my fault you caught it on fire, but I do send you a very nice one that's maybe used twice and had one bad zipper pull. So anything that comes back that just has a little tiny issue, I will take care of it. And then I have these for those folks that may have a different issue that we didn't even, you know, they just bought their brand new pack, they're super jacked, and then something stupid happens, they rip the side of it out, you know, catching it on a barbed wire fence, you know. So anyway, we've been really, really conscientious to make sure that the brand is upheld, based back on that foundation I told you we built on from the beginning. So it's working well.
Good. Now, one of the last questions I have for you is, when someone starts the process and they're looking for a pack, you know, like you mentioned, there's several other brands out there that make a good quality pack. Why should someone choose Tenzing?
Well, look at the features, look at the specs. Like I said, I mean, my goal was to answer all the questions, and so. All the way from, I mean, how do I drive the consumer to the dealer? So when the consumer gets to the dealer, I need that person really to be pre-sold before he gets there. So he's looking for a Tenzing pack. Because if I can do that, then the dealer automatically sells and he's happy and I'm reselling to him and I'm happy. And so if you go look at our website and you truly don't think that we have the most innovative packs, you know, on the market. We have like 10 patents in 5 years on this stuff. The turkey pack is patented. The carbon fiber pack is patented. Our bird vest is patented. Our innovation is incredibly cutting edge. And I'm not saying other people's isn't, because that's the question you asked me, but I'm saying compare, you know, go to Tenzing and look at what we're offering. And then if you're looking for, you know, a 5,000 cubic inch pack and you're going to be doing a backcountry hunt, well, then look at the competition against Tenzing and compare. Compare the specs, compare the warranty, compare the compartments, compare the pockets. Make sure that it'll carry meat in against your back. It can't carry meat on the outside because it doesn't carry well out there. The pack has to carry the weight up tight against your back. So if you go through and look at all the things, the pockets, the compartments, the adjustability, the materials that are used, how quiet is it, I truly believe that you'll know why you want a Tenzing when you're done evaluating.
Nice. Fair enough. So I think that pretty much does it. You asked or answered every question that I had for you. And I guess if people want to learn more about Tenzing packs, where should you send them?
Yeah, go to TenzingOutdoors.com and, you know, or the social media we've got on our Facebook page. Tenzing has a good social media. We've got almost 190,000 following there. And just look at that. Just again, if you look at that alone and compare it, we didn't buy those. That's part of the whole goal, was to become the number one leader in the pack world and have a following of people that understand why we are who we are. So anyway, TenzingOutdoors.com is a great place, and the social media Tenzing on the Facebook, and then there's Twitter and all that stuff that I don't do, so I can't even answer how you do that. I don't know.
Just point and click, right?
Yeah, I don't even know. I don't have it set up.
All right. You know,
one last thing I want to let everybody know before you kick me off here is I've had questions from the very beginning. Where did Tenzing name come from? And some people know, some people don't. But if you can give me 2 minutes, I'll explain that.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so as we built this brand, we built a foundation, and everything was built off that foundation. And we did a big study, and we studied all of our competition and where they fit into the archetypes. And that was all part of what we were doing as we built this brand. And if you look at all the competition and where they fit, and the puzzle pieces fit, like, you know, I'm the best, I'm this, I'm that, I'm everything else. There was nobody that was in the world of a hero-based brand. And so that's how we chose that. And so once we knew we were going to be the hero-based brand, which meant, okay, Tenzing's going to be there for this consumer every time they want to go. We're always going to be there so that they can go further and stay longer. That's what we want. We want to let that come out in the real world. Go further, stay longer. Go further, stay longer. We want your experience to be better. We want to be the hero and help the hunter be a better hunter. We're not the hunter. We're just the thing that can help the hunter be better. So that we worked off that, and then we started talking about names, and you know, different names came up. We did a big study on that, and I didn't know Nike was a female goddess. So we studied Nike and Harley Davidson and all these other ones. And so once we did that, we said, hey, let's start talking about names that would fit this brand. And so as we went through that whole process, Tenzing Norgay came up. And, you know, that man was an amazing man. He was a Sherpa, obviously. He took Sir Edmund Hillary to the top of Mount Everest. He was the Sherpa that took the first guy to the top of Mount Everest, you know, and I thought that is really a cool deal. And I would guess that he probably was the first one to the top. Who knows? Doesn't matter. When we talked about that, it wasn't about Tenzing, but we started talking about the Sherpa. The Sherpas are carrying all the goods for all these people that climb Mount Everest all the time. And that fit the brand exactly right. We're there to help the people carry these goods, and so that fit the brand. And so we went back and we said, Tenzing is a really catchy name, and it's kind of like Nike. Once you hear it, you never forget it.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I like to share that because that's where that all came from. You know, we have a lot of respect for Tenzing Norgay and what he did. And, you know, we certainly wouldn't want to take anything away from his name, but that's how Tenzing, the name of the patch, came about. And so.
A little bit of background.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, Jay, thanks for coming on the show and, repping Tenzing. And, I'm sure we'll talk again.
Thank you very much for giving me the time. I really do appreciate it.
And there you have it, another podcast Bites the Dust. Thanks to Jay for coming on the show, talking all things Tenzing. Now, Tenzing has decided to take part in this week's podcast giveaway, and they are offering the winner of the podcast their choice between three packs, a 1500, a 2200, and a 3000. I have the TZ4000. Which is not available, but I will tell you that these packs are pretty badass. So the winner will get to choose between a 1500, a 2200, and a 3000. And how do you win? The very first thing you do is go to Nine Finger Chronicles Facebook page and share, click the share button, and share the Facebook post that mentions this podcast. Then I want you to go to Tenzing's Facebook page, and I want you to comment Nine Fingers Sent Me. And I'm going to check both those places. And if you're in both those places, then I'll put you into the drawing, and you will have a chance to win your choice of one of those packs. So go and do that. Now, the next thank you is to you guys for listening. If you haven't already, make sure you're going to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribing. Do me a favor, go leave a review on iTunes and let me know what you think. Also, go to Facebook, go to Instagram, Twitter, all that crap. And last but not least, want to thank Exodus Outdoor Gear and their trail cameras for sponsoring the show. Make sure you guys head over to exodusoutdoorgear.com. Badass camera, if I do say so myself. And thank you. So with that said, have a great week, and remember to wear your damn safety harness.